My name is Herman Fouché. I go by Rusty, and I am an assistant professor at the University of Alabama at Birmingham in the Health Behavior Department in the School of Public Health. And I'm also director of the Survey Research Unit, the unit by which we collected data for this particular project. I'd just like to, just while the names are up there, acknowledge the co-authors on this. Roy and Edward are neurologists, Polly, Dora, and Maria are in preventive medicine, and then there's myself. So it's a really good team of people working on this project. And then I have no financial relationships to disclose. So what I'm going to talk about today is the results of a survey that we completed in Jefferson County, Alabama, among a random sample of people on Medicare. And the results here are part of a larger study, which as discussions go, we may talk about a little bit more. But here what we're interested in is looking at people who have some self-reported history of seizures or seizure-like activity. And the reason why we wanted to look at this population are for a couple reasons, as you can see listed there. That people with seizures, folks who have epilepsy specifically, but not necessarily, consequences of that may include, as you can see, the loss of independence, increased injury risks from falling mostly. And then the one that we're interested in looking at for this particular study are limitations in activities of daily living. I start out with just a statistic there on the number of people with epilepsy in the United States. And so as the study was designed, what we're really after from this are to identify people who truly have epilepsy cases. The folks that, as you'll see here reported today, who have had some type of seizure history were followed up to see which one of those actually have epilepsy. But today I want to talk about those who reported any type of seizure history, not just those that have epilepsy. The problem that we're going to look at for the study is limitations in activities of daily living. And you'll see the list of those in just a second. But these are really just those behaviors that help you get by on a daily basis, those things that you do just to need to take care of yourself from a day-to-day activity. We've seen in previous research that children with neurological disorders do have increased limitations with their activities of daily living. And so we're kind of expecting that to see if we find that in our older population that we're examining here. So as you can see listed here, we have three kind of points that we're going after, three goals for this project. One, we want to look at the prevalence of these self-reported seizure-like activities. How many people actually report having those? And then looking at any kind of limitations or problems with activities of daily living, and then looking at differences between ADLs and seizure history. The method that we used for this, as I said, was a telephone survey. We surveyed over 1,000 Medicare beneficiaries at random in Jefferson County, Alabama. The process for that was for Medicare beneficiaries to be randomly selected, for them to receive an opt-out letter. Those that did not opt out were then, you know, passively kind of eligible to be contacted. We then contacted those people. As you can see here, the things that we're going to report about today, difficulties in ADLs, seizure histories, looking at comorbidities, and demographics. Here you can see the list of activities of daily living. And so the question was, because of a health or physical problem, have you had any difficulty with the following activities? And you can see the list there from bathing through walking down to the bottom of managing money. So again, these are just the things on a day-to-day basis that you need to, you know, exist and to be self-sufficient. And so the list there is interesting, as we see talking about the results, that there will be results significantly for all of those. And then here are our synonym list for self-reported seizures. In the population there, we came up with what we thought were the likely terms that people might use to describe seizures, or shaking spells or staring spells. So in the survey, we asked people, over the course of your life, have you ever had a seizure? Those who said no to that, we then asked, have you ever had convulsions? And so on down the line. So what you'll see reported today our reports of all of those combined together. In addition, I won't read the list here. It's rather long, as you'll see. We also asked if they've had different comorbidities or other medical problems. The ones that are of most interest here are the ones kind of down to the end. We're asking about a head injury or a brain tumor, as those that we'll report on a little bit later. Those people with head injuries did have some differences there. But you can see we assessed quite a few with that. So again, for the analysis, we looked at self-reported seizure history, demographics by seizure history, difficulties with ADL, and then looked at our GLM model for looking at the significant interactions there. And you can see the list of the dependent variable, how many activity problems they have, the history of seizure, and then the other covariates there. Okay. So getting to the results, the more interesting part of the study here, you can see graphed the percentages of the seizure-like episodes that we had reported. So just about 3% of the people reported having a seizure, and you can see the percentages are pretty small across the different ones, shaking episodes and fainting spells, as you'll see, are the ones that were most commonly reported. And then the bar at the far right there is the sum of all of those. So it was about 16-17% of people in our sample reported any time of these seizure-like episodes during their life. The table here breaks out the demographics for who've had seizures and who have not. As you can see, 17% of the total population had some type of self-reported seizure. The differences there are not significant until you get down to the last one there for those who have had a brain injury, which is really one or more of if they've had a head injury, a brain tumor, or a stroke. And so those that have had any type of those are more likely to have had a seizure than those who have not had any type of those brain injuries. Problems with activities of daily living. The same list that you saw just a minute ago, broken down by who have not had self-reported seizures and who have. As you can see across all 12 of the lists there, that the reports of problems with these activities are more pronounced among those with seizures than those without. Some of them, as you can see, the differences are pretty large. For example, walking 60% versus 34%. Other ones, not such a huge difference, but again, all of those are significantly greater. When we put the demographics, the covariates, seizure history into the GLM for the number of difficulties, as you can see, these variables here remain significant. So controlling for other factors, people with seizures had more problems with activities of daily living, folks who were older, folks with less education, African Americans, those with brain injuries, those with any of that list of comorbidities that you just saw, and then also with poor health, they tend to report more problems with activities of daily living. So the kind of summary of this, what we found from this, is that 17% of this population reported some type of seizure-like activity. Again, this is something that's much more prevalent than epilepsy and may represent other conditions that we did not measure for. For example, maybe Parkinson's or something in addition to that. However, the consequences of having that in your history were pronounced in all of those activities of daily living. People reported significantly greater problems across all of those activities that we measured. Again, and those were significant beyond controlling for any kind of all of the demographic differences there. And so at the end, as you can see related there, the ADL problems were greater for people who had older age, less education, for African Americans, those who had brain injuries, those who have at least one of the comorbidities, and then overall a worse health rating. A couple of limitations, of course, for the study. Here, these are just self-reported symptoms. For people, I'm not going to report on this here, but just for your information, people who did report any of those activities, we did go up and follow up with them with the nurse to see if they actually fit a diagnosis of epilepsy. And then the ultimate goal for that is to see then for those people if there are diagnostic codes in the Medicare claims data that actually indicate that they do have epilepsy. And then a secondary limitation here is that the symptoms may report something greater than epilepsy, but again, these kind of seizure-like episodes or tremors do have disruptions for people. And then finally, just kind of as the last conclusion, here we're just kind of talking about, you know, maybe having increased recognition of the potential problems that people have, that if people have had seizure histories, that there may be more attention need to be paid to them for them to be able to manage their self-care and take care of themselves. And then just at the end, I just want to acknowledge the people who were involved in the project. Funding came from the Centers for Disease Control, folks in preventive medicine, and then Maria Pizu, who is the PI for the larger study of which this is a part. And that is everything I have to say, so thank you.
Great. We do have some time for some questions to any of the presenters. Okay.
Have you compared any of your daily accident rates in your same cohort with the same injury?
I used to ask all the patients in the research about all the drivers are really about the accident rate, but you know, the driving avoidance behavior is not about self confidence about driving, not about objecting the driving ability. So there is a subset, the you know, people who are avoiding drive, avoiding challenges. Are not really persons who are really able to drive. So it's more about like subjective you know, perception, not about objective their own driving ability. So it's not, you know, like to proactively prevent accidents.
Yeah. Did I see a question in the back? Kind sir.
I'm a nitty gritty kind of guy. This is a question now for you, sir.
Sure.
Were you able to get a sampling list of Medicare people in your community of interest? And then what was your opt-out rate? And then what was your participation rate of those that you contacted?
Yeah, the way that the sample selection worked is, I think I'm going to get the name wrong, this organization in Minnesota, ResDAT, yes, thank you. From which you can request that they draw a sample of recipients from the Medicare list. They then send the opt-out letters to the individuals that are selected. Those that don't send back things, we then got actually names and addresses for from the organization, and then we actually had to go and find the telephone numbers on our own from that list. I am not sure of what the opt-out rate was. The sample that we received from them, I believe, contained, I think we ended up with a sample of something under 2,000 names. From that, we were able to get approximately 1,500 phone numbers associated with that, and then from those, we got the 1,000. Recipients. And so some of the numbers were not good. Some people had passed away from the list that we had. And so the overall response rate, I'm going to probably not be exactly accurate with this, but we had a pretty good rate. It may have been about 65% or so. Yes, that's true. And what we received from them were just the contact information after that. I'm not sure what the rate of that was.
Thank you.
You're welcome.